Hello, everybody. We are almost to football season, to college football season anyway, as the Wisconsin Badgers prepare to kick off the 2018 campaign on Friday night at Camp Randall Stadium in Madison, facing off with Western Kentucky. And to commemorate what should be a pretty exciting season for Badgers fans, we're kicking off the Journal Sentinel Wisconsin Badgers podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'll be host of the podcast each week, joined by Jeff Patricus, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter, covering the Wisconsin Badgers football team. It's a team that is expected to be in the college football playoff, according to a number of national publications. It's a team that was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They've got a number of players back who led them to the Big Ten Championship game last year and the Orange Bowl. And this plan should be a pretty exciting season, as many people know by now. So among the topics I discussed on our inaugural episode of the podcast with Jeff Patricus include, you know, basics looking at this team. Who are some of the names we're not talking about on that star-studded offense? And who are some of the guys on defense that this team cannot live without? It's no secret there's going to be some new playmakers emerging on defense. Jeff Patricus has been covering as well the off-field issues facing wide receivers Quintez Cephas and Danny Davis. Cephas facing a hearing here in the early weeks of September. He's also not with the team. He's suspended for two games, and it's unclear what his status will be going forward as he faces charges of sexual assault. Danny Davis, who was also part of the incidents that have gotten Cephas in hot water, he's also been suspended for two games for taking a photograph of one of the victims. He is, like I said, not with the team now. As of right now, should be back with the team for the third week of the season against BYU, but had Jeff Patricus break that down a little bit, as well as several other facets. Talked about Zach Bond, talked about Alex Hornibrook, everybody's favorite lightning rod, talked about Friday night games. This is the second year now that the Badgers will be playing on a Friday night, and what Jeff thinks about that. Want to let you know that September's a great month to be a Wisconsin sports fan. You've got the Brewers, you've got the Packers. Aaron Rodgers just signed his big contract on Wednesday, so obviously the Packers are top of mind. The Bucks are right around the corner as they prepare to open up their brand new Pfizer Forum. Obviously, you've got the Badgers, and high school sports are in high gear already, so you should definitely want a subscription to the Journal Sentinel. You can check out our Labor Day deal, which is very, very good. First-time subscribers can save up to 97% through the first 3 months. For $1, you can get 3 months of digital access. That's a special offer for first-time subscribers. Visit jsonline.com/deal. That's where you want to go, jsonline.com/deal, to get all the benefits. There's some print subscription deal for you as well. You should check that out and get the Journal Sentinel onto your mobile device or in your hands so that you can follow all the great sports content we've got coming up. This podcast will be housed on Apple Podcasts. Wherever you get your podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, you can find this one. But give us a rating, leave us a comment, tell us what you think a little bit, and we'll be sure to take that feedback, implement it, try and craft this thing to be as good as it can be. And also it helps us reach more people if we get some feedback. So take some time out, Apple Podcasts, check us out, and then also jsonline.com/deal. Without further ado, let's join Jeff Patricus. And here now is Jeff Patricus, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter covering your Wisconsin Badgers. You can find all of his content at jsonline.com. And Jeff, we'll start right off the top. This Badgers team has gotten a ton of attention. They're on the cover of Sports Illustrated. They're considered by many people to be a team that should end up in the college football playoff at the end of the year. I mean, you've seen them practice. Just off the top, are these high expectations as warranted as it seems? And if there are one or two things that could stand in their way, what might those things be?
I think the expectations are warranted in part, you know, they're based on what the personnel that you have returning on offense, an experienced quarterback, what is expected to be a very good offensive line, a legitimate Heisman guy in Jonathan Taylor, who set the FBS freshman rushing record a year ago. Now, the wide receiver depth has taken a hit because of some legal issues. But, you know, and I think people have faith in the coaching staff when you look at the resume, 10-3, 11-3, 13-1. So people are looking at the returning talent saying, well, they're ready to take the next step. The biggest thing that could trip them up is you've got significant question marks on the defense. We have only four returning starters. You have a thin, inexperienced front. You have questions at outside linebacker. And you have three new starters in the projected starters in the secondary.
So you mentioned then quickly the wide receiver issue. Last we saw with Quintez Cephas, I think his next hearing now is going to be September 11th. What's the latest that you? Oh,
Sixth,
the
December
6th. Okay,
6th.
so what's the latest with his case? The way I'm understanding is that there's almost no chance that we're going to see him, even if everything goes well legally for him, that we'll see him on the field at any point this season. What's sort of the next couple steps in that whole process?
Well, that's a little bit premature because you don't know what's going to happen. The next hearing is a preliminary hearing, which probably you probably won't get a lot of substance out of that. You'll probably have the detectives who are involved in the investigation testify. But, you know, here's the thing. You never know how these cases are going to unfold. I've seen a sexual assault case carry all the way through to the end where an individual was convicted, or found guilty, and sentenced to hard time. I've seen another case, Dwayne Smith, former UW tailback, where I think it was right after the preliminary hearing, it was obvious to the DA that they could not get a jury to convict the individual beyond a reasonable doubt, and charges were dropped. So it's really hard to predict that he's going to be out X number of weeks or he's not going to play at all again. Now, the other factor to consider, regardless of what happens in the criminal case, is the alleged victims could pursue a Title IX complaint with UW. That's. And, you know, people have asked me, well, if you're acquitted in a criminal trial, how can that be possible that you can have an issue of Title IX? I liken it to criminal versus civil actions that we've seen for other individuals. So it could be a very long road for Cephas, no matter what happens in the criminal case.
Danny Davis, who's also associated with this case, he got two game suspension from the Badgers. And I it's hard to get more a lot of information about his role in all of this. Is it possible that there are greater ramifications for him down the line, or is this going to be just a two game thing and then maybe that's it? I don't know what happens with him next.
Well, there's a couple of things at work here. You would think by now that if the DA's office planned to file criminal charges against Davis, it would have happened already. Now, maybe something comes out during testimony during the trial with Cephas that we're unaware of, that's not in the criminal complaint, that the police haven't found yet. But that strikes me that that would be unusual. In my opinion, what we've seen is that UW officials who were aware of Cephas's situation as the investigation was going on, I think what probably happened is that the allegations in the criminal complaint, and that was that Davis took at least one photo of one of the alleged victims, probably wasn't disclosed initially. And once that came out in the criminal complaint, I think UW had to reevaluate and decided to hand down a two-game suspension. Paul Chris has not said that, but that's my read on the situation.
One of the reasons people were so excited about this offense going into the year is that they seem to have this vertical game that they have lacked in the past. They've always had strong running game, and they certainly do again this year. But without Cephas and Davis, certainly those are two of the bigger receiving weapons available to Hornibrook. Do you think that without them, for these first two games in particular, that we'll see them more as a supplement to the running game, or do you think that this receiving core can still be explosive enough where they can be something beyond what we've seen from previous Badgers teams?
I think you'll see a little bit of mix. Obviously, they're going to try to establish the run. Now, you've got the two games, be Western Kentucky in the opener, New Mexico in the second game, and then if all things stay the same, Danny Davis would be back for BYU game three, you know, to get a little prep work in for the Big Ten opener. So they still got some guys who can stretch the field. A.J. Taylor is a vertical threat. Kendrick Pryor, who had a fantastic camp, is. Aaron Cruickshank, a freshman, is a guy to watch. He's not going to have a huge role because he's just a freshman, but they're going to try to get the ball in his hands, and he's probably the fastest wide receiver, if not one of the fastest players on the team. You could not overthrow him if you were a quarterback trying to hit him in camp. He basically ran down every ball that was a little too deep. So they still have the weapons, not as deep as they would like. And the thing you have to remember too, say Davis comes back and he plays every game in the season except the first two. They played the last five games last year without Quintez Cephas. They were 4-1, the only loss being to Ohio State. So they grew accustomed to playing without him. He's a heck of a player, and he would make them even better. But they know what it's like to play without him. The key for this offense is going to be the offensive line and the running game. If you are able to move people off the line, establish the run, quarterback Alex Hornibrook will have receivers open and time to throw because of the play action game.
I think this offensive line might be the most have the most notoriety of any preseason offensive line that I can remember in Badgers history, and we know a lot of their names. We know Taylor, like you said, Hornibrook, some of these receivers. Is there anyone on the offense floating below the radar who's going to maybe have an impact that we're not even counting on yet? You've written a little bit about Tywan Deal this past week. Maybe that's the guy. Maybe there's a backup lineman who's really going to step into a role if called upon. Is there anybody we're not even thinking about right now who could be a big contributor on that side of the ball?
Some new faces would be Cruikshank, who I mentioned, both as a receiver, but also maybe on jet sweeps or fly sweeps, as I like to call them. He's about 5'9", oh man, 155-ish, if that. But he doesn't take, he's quick enough that he, and he's very good at avoiding solid hits, and he's fast and quick. I mean, he played a lot of, you know, option high school in football in Brooklyn. So he's really good with the ball in his hands. Deal is another guy. If he's healthy, he's going to be able to pound the ball for them, whether it's middle of the field, if Jonathan Taylor needs a break, whether it's short yardage, or whether down by the goal line. Another kid would be Jake Ferguson, a redshirt freshman tight end, the younger brother of Joe Ferguson, the safety who left after last season. Jake is going to give them, he's not a great blocker right now. He's willing, but he's just not used to blocking people. He didn't do it in high school. But you spread him out, get him on either a linebacker or even a safety, he's going to win those matchups. He is going to give the Alex Hornibrook a receiving threat, and in particular, if they can do it early, to help offset the loss, the absence of Cephas and Davis.
Alex Hornibrook is going to get a ton of attention this year, good and bad. He's, you know, lightning rod seems to be the Wisconsin quarterback position the last few years. Is he essentially the same player we saw last year, or have you observed areas where he's improved?
You know, what you saw at the end of last year in certain games, I would say the Michigan game in particular and the Miami game, where when the offensive line gave him areas at the line of scrimmage to step up into the pocket, he did a good job of identifying what the defense was doing quickly and then stepping up and making really good throws. He did it against Miami. The throw that really stands out in the Michigan game was the 3rd-and-16 touchdown to A.J. Taylor, where he dropped back, Michael Dieter kicked the end around him, Hornibrook was able to step up into a throwing lane and deliver a really crisp pass down the seam to Taylor for a touchdown that gave them the lead for good in that game. So if he starts to do that more, he'll be fine. When he has problems, it's generally footwork. When he's throwing off his back foot, not with a solid base. John Budmeyer, the quarterback's coach, worked on his base a lot in the spring and in camp. When he avoids that, he's in good shape. Or sometimes he trusts his receivers too much and the accuracy of his arm. It's very accurate, but sometimes he'll try to fit into a little too tight a space, maybe on an early down, as opposed to throwing it away and having another down to go at it.
Let's flip onto the defensive side of the ball. You've written about Zach Bond, and I've seen a lot of prep football in the Milwaukee area and remember him well at Brown Deer High School, one of the more explosive athletes I think I saw in my tenure, and certainly one of the more intriguing players on that defense. But injuries have slowed him down, you know, especially last year, missed the whole year with a broken foot. What type of player is he now? And I'm curious if the injuries have sort of had a cumulative effect or if he looks as explosive as we may remember him from high school.
He's still, I mean, it's not like you're seeing a guy who can't move anymore, can't explode, can't run. That's all still there. The issue with Zach will be, is he strong enough and does he have good enough leverage to hold up against the run out on the edges, because he's not as thick and as big as some of the previous outside linebackers, including both guys last year. And can he use his speed to his advantage? I talked to him a lot about, you know, I'd watch him in one-on-one pass rush drills against Wisconsin's better tackles. And I said, okay, you know, tell me what you learned through that. And he said, one, I'm quicker than I thought. And two, I can't use my speed all the time. I've got to have counter moves. But he was showing a physical side to him going up against, for example, David Edwards in one-on-one pass rush drills in camp. So he's got some strength to him. It'll be interesting to see if he can use his speed to get around guys and then set up guys because of that speed with some counter moves. But the one thing he said was, he goes, look at our offensive linemen. He goes, I will not face better linemen this year than I have in practice. He goes, and that will benefit me in the long run. And he just got to stay healthy. If he stays healthy, he'll be a player.
A lot of new faces on that defense. No secret there. I guess I'm curious, who are the one or two guys that the Badgers really won't be able to live without? I mean, I look at maybe Andrew Van Ginkle as a guy with experience who made some big plays, especially the big interception in the Big Ten championship game that we remember. Are there other guys that really the Badgers cannot afford to lose?
I would say it starts up front with Olive Sanopolu, because he's the only experienced lineman. I mean, whether you're talking nose, whether you're talking ends, it's a young, thin group. So if he goes down, you don't have another nose tackle to replace him. It would be a true freshman in Bryson Williams. And you lose the most experienced player on that unit. You do not want to lose him, especially when you go against some teams in the Big Ten that are going to run the ball. Because he's gotten into himself. He believes he can play not just in a base three down line, but he feels he can play if they go with a 2-4-5, if they want to generate some pass rush. So we'll see. But, yeah, you don't want to lose him. Then Ginkle, they don't have a – you know, they like Zach Bond's potential. I think Tyler Johnson is solid as a number three outside linebacker, but you don't have a guy to replace Van Ginkle if he were to go down. They're a little thinner there than they've been in the past. Safety, I'd probably have to go with Dakota Dixon, because he's your only experienced guy in the back end. He had some injury issues last year, a nagging hamstring, which kind of had him in and out of the lineup. But you don't have any experienced guy to replace him, and his communication skills will be integral working with the other safety, Scotty Nelson. Those two are tremendous together. You don't want to break up that tandem, and you just have no one who can fill in for Dakota at the same level.
So mentioning that defensive line that's a little depleted, part of that being the injuries, of course, this offseason to Garrett Rand and Isaiah Loudermilk. What's the latest on when you expect to see Loudermilk suited up for the Badgers? And, I mean, I'm curious about this flipping of Caden Lyles from the offensive line to the defensive line. That might be one of the more intriguing guys to watch this year as he switches positions.
Well, as far as Loudermilk goes, he's still ahead of schedule, and his anticipation was to be able to play one game, get a little action before the Big Ten opener. So that would be week three against BYU. And nothing's changed along those lines. So that's one you just got to keep monitoring, because he's doing rehab and hasn't returned to practice yet. But he's still working out. But if you have one setback that sets you back for a week or two, that's not something they can afford. But his goal is to at least get one game in before the Big Ten opener. And Lyles is interesting, because generally the thing that they've done in the past, and a lot of teams do, is move defensive linemen to offensive line. I bumped into Chris Ash from Rutgers down in Chicago, former UW assistant, for the Big Ten meetings, and we were just shooting the breeze a little bit, and we were talking about the defensive line. And I asked him, I said, have you ever had a guy who you moved from offensive line to defense? He said, no. And Anoka Breckerfield, UW's defensive line coach, said the same thing. Usually it's the other way around. Wisconsin done that a lot. So can he make the transition, which will probably only be 1 year if they're healthy next year? That remains to be seen. But the other guy is Matt Henningsen from Menomonee Falls, who a walk-on redshirt freshman, wasn't projected to be a starter, but after 1 week of camp, they bumped in ahead of Aaron Volpahl, and he's been in the starting unit from, you know, that second week of camp. That's another one. You've got to see how he can handle it.
Yeah, Henningsen, another local guy from Milwaukee, prep football fans out of Menomonee Falls, who of course had a good very, very good prep career as well. So Friday night kickoff, Badgers will be facing off with Western Kentucky. They struggled a little bit last year after being a pretty strong team, though, years before that, a conference championship caliber team. Is there anything on their profile that suggests that they can be one of those first week giant killers? There always seems to be a couple games like that. You know, the Appalachian State against Michigan is sort of the top of mind there. Is there anything to suggest that Western Kentucky could give Wisconsin some problems?
I think there's one way, and that would be if they plant a spy in the buses that UW players will be able to drive over to the stadium, and they take them somewhere out of Dane County, and UW misses the game. That would be the only way that Western Kentucky is going to win. And the reason I say that is very simple. They've got question marks on defense. They have a lot of question marks on offense, and it starts with quarterback. That's a quarterback-centric system. Their best quarterback, who threw for more than 4,000 yards last year, Mike White, is with the Cowboys right now. They got his replacement has thrown 11 passes total in college. So even though Wisconsin has questions on the defense, Western Kentucky, I'm sure their staff really has no idea yet what kind of passing game they're going to have when you go from an experienced guy who threw for more than 4,000 yards to a guy who hasn't that much experience and has, you know, 8 of 11 passing the ball.
Jonathan Taylor, we've mentioned him at points in this podcast. He set the bar so high for himself last year. And I don't know if maybe even setting us up for a little bit of a disappointment, because it's just hard to match what he did last year. But if you had to guess, and there's a million variables here, but if you had to guess at the outset, is this a guy that we're going to see as a finalist for the Heisman at the end of the year?
I think he's got a chance. I don't see why not. The thing that helps him is that his name was out there, is out there now, when it wasn't a year ago. That's, I mean, when you have that on your resume, what he did a year ago, rushing for almost 2,000 yards, you're automatically in every voter's mind right at the start of the season. So unless you bomb, you're going to be in their mind at the end of the season. And in particular, if Wisconsin has a good year and gets to the Big Ten championship game. But as far as Heisman finalists, here's the thing. If I'm watching Jonathan Taylor this year, from the stands or wherever, this is what I look for. Not forget his yardage total. That doesn't matter what his yards are going to be. Does he do a better job, you know, with ball control? Because he started to fumble at a higher rate in the second half of last season than he did in the first half. So he's got to take care of the ball better. Is he a factor in the passing game? He worked really hard on that in the spring and again in camp. There are some days he catches the ball comfortably. Other days you can see him battling it. He's not. Some backs are just great. Boom, ball hits their hands. They catch it, they tuck, and they go. You've got to work on that. And also, do they use him in goal line situations? If you remember, as the season went on, there were some times in the Big Ten championship game, Chris James was the guy that got the ball to score the touchdown that put him within one score. Tywan Diehl may have that role this year. So can he have an impact in other areas than just racking up big rushing yards? That would make him a better back. And whether he's a Heisman finalist or whatever his yardage total is, if he's a better all-around back, that will help the Wisconsin offense and make Wisconsin a better team.
We haven't talked much about special teams, but Rafael Gaglianone has had some injury history coming into the year, and then again at the start of camp he was a little dinged up. Will this team be okay if he winds up missing any time as far as the kicking game goes?
Overall, it would, because you would think that they have enough offense to win the bulk of their games where it doesn't come down to the last second field goal. But you want a guy who's 23 out of his last 26 on the field, and he has four game winning kicks. You want that guy, because if you remember him in 2016, I remember we watched him in camp. He was just crushing the ball, and not just height and distance, but accuracy. And all three of those kicks in the game against LSU, including the game winner, were right down the middle. I mean, he was really sharp, and that's the year he ended up missing most of it because of the back surgery. Now, Colin Larsh is the number two kicker, a walk-on from Monona Grove, has a decent leg. He's confident, has a good personality to him, but he does not have the experience of Rafael. And where, you know, say there's an injury and you're playing Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, and you're on the road against Michigan or Penn State where you need a game-winning kick, obviously you'd rather have your senior with four game-winning kicks, walking out on that field to put the game in his hands.
What do you make of this Friday night kickoff? There was some debate about it a couple years ago when the Big Ten announced they'd do games like this, that they would coincide with the high school game. You know, beyond that, it's just a strange setting. It's a weird night of the week. It's a night game. I mean, does anything jump out at you? Do you find this to be sort of a weird part of the routine, or is it? I mean, I suppose first game of the year kind of can just fall just about anywhere and not really interrupt too much, I would imagine.
It was a simple money grab, which is disgusting. I mean, we all know it's about money. They came to the Big Ten and said, hey, we need inventory. How about Friday nights? Oh, okay. And then the way the Big Ten did it. Well, everybody's going to play Friday night games, so many games in so many years. Oh, but some of you guys don't want to play Friday night games, like Michigan and Ohio State. Well, okay, you don't have to. So it was just, I don't like the way it was handled. There was no need for it other than to make more money. There's no reason the Big Ten couldn't have said, you know what? We're not going to go to Friday nights. It's for high schools. Just let them have that night. They could have done it that way, but they didn't because they wanted more money. And I just, you know, there's no reason. They did not need to play on Friday night.
Last thought, just anything else that we haven't touched on that you're going to be looking forward to at this first game? Any storyline that you're particularly interested in?
The largest number of questions I have would be on the defense. How does a really young secondary, a revamped secondary, hold up against a team that's going to want to throw it around a lot, really going to push the tempo, no huddle, getting up the line of scrimmage quickly. Do they line up properly? Are there coverage busts? Are there guys running free, wide receivers? Because you've got to remember, last year Jim Leonard had Dakota Dixon, who had experience, And he had Jamerson once he moved from corner to safety, did a really nice job. And he had two experienced cornerbacks, and Nick Nelson and Derek Tindall, he knew he was going to get pretty much every week. Those guys had seen everything. Jim said the other day when we were talking about the secondary, you know, yeah, I've got my starters now, but I'm going to rotate a lot of guys through. He goes, and it's not that there was a huge separation in talent. It's that these two guys, Van Hicks and Cesar Williams, the starting corners, they were the most consistent day in and day out with their effort and execution. So I want to see how those guys react. I want to see how often he uses three down linemen versus two, because you can play a 2-4-5 against a pass-happy team, but at some point you got to know what you have up front when you start to play teams like Iowa and Michigan that really are going to try to pound the ball at you. So it's most of my questions are on the defense. See how they respond for the first time. Or if there's good communication, and you have a small number of breakdowns in the back end.
Jeff Patricus, you can find his content at jsonline.com. Follow him Friday night as the Badgers take on Western Kentucky in the 2018 season opener. Thanks, Jeff. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, take care.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy kickoff on Friday night as the Wisconsin Badgers get prepped to face the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. We'll be back with you again next week with Jeff Patricus to try and catch you up on everything that happened in that game and look forward to the second battle of the season against New Mexico. Thanks for listening. We'll chat with you again soon.